All right, I got Dr. Kirk Parsley on the show today. He's a former Navy SEAL performance optimization doctor and the founder of Sleep Remedy. Dr. Kirk, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate the soapbox.
Yeah. And that was just like the short version. I could have kept going. Yes. Dude, I'm excited to jam out with you because you're like an OG in the industry. And I remember following you probably 8 years ago. I heard you on a Ben Greenfield podcast, and really your breakthrough at the time was sleep. Everyone was coming to you for sleep optimization. You were a Navy SEAL. Then you were the Navy SEAL's like head doctor. You're helping get these guys back in the battlefield. I mean, these guys got to make split second decisions, the ultimate, right?
Right.
And they're getting good results all of a sudden. They're recovering better. And so all of a sudden I'm hearing you on all the podcasts with this sleep formula that you had concocted, and people are getting great results. So man, just take us back there really quick, and then we'll catch up to now. But take us back to like what was going on then. That I'm curious, like hadn't people thought about this? Like, what were you thinking about differently about sleep in a way that's like, guys, you're missing it, and you're getting the best of the best better. So that says something.
Yeah, well, I think what happened was, in any scientific field, obviously biological scientific field, there's a disconnect between the benchtop researchers and the clinicians, right? And that's always existed. And sleep medicine it's a really young science. I mean, it is like 60 years old, properly. And 60 years ago, basically they observed that people's eyes moved a lot under their eyelids and called it rapid eye movement. And that was like a scientific discovery 60 years ago. Right. So, I mean, we haven't known much about sleep for very long. We still don't know. There's a whole lot that we still don't know about it. What happened is that details I won't go into, is not important, but basically, I was a Navy medical officer, a Navy doctor, headed for orthopedics was my pipeline. And then, but in the military, like you have to go out and be a GP for a while, or they'd never have GPs, because once you specialize, they're not going to send, a surgeon out to be a general practitioner. So, that's part of the game. And so I controlled what I could so that I could go, I had to go through dive school so that I could go back to be a doctor for the SEAL teams. And, we had just built our first rehab facility, and we had all these experts. We had ortho rounds coming through and pain rounds coming through, and we had acupuncture and chiropractors and physical therapists and athletic trainers and strength and conditioning coaches and nutritionists. And we hired all these great people like the first year I was there. And in the Navy, so that made me the dumbest guy around, right? And so, world-class people from Olympic Training Center, professional sports, like top colleges, like we got the best people. And now I was the dumbest guy around. And so they said, well, you're the dumbest guy around, you're in charge, right? So now you supervise all these people. And, it wasn't much of a job description. I couldn't supervise people who knew so much more than me about their field. But what happened was, SEALs don't like, they don't like the vulnerability of saying there's anything wrong with them, one. But two, they don't trust medical providers, because the worst thing that can happen to them is you put them on the bench, and the first thing they think a doctor is going to do is put them on the bench. They can come in and they complain. It's like, oh, we need to take you out of your platoon until we figure this out. So because I'd been a SEAL, and I'd been a SEAL recently enough to where there's still a ton of SEALs there that I'd served with, gone through training with or deployed with or whatever. And I obviously had a good enough reputation where they trusted me, and they just came in my office and, kind of one by one, they'd shut the door and go, hey man, I need to tell you what's going on with me. Obviously I don't want this going out there, but I need to tell you what's really going on with me and see if I can get some help. And, they come in and list this litany of symptoms, a lot of cognitive stuff. So can't concentrate, can't focus, mental motivation's down, emotions are all over the place, snapping at their kids, can't pay attention in briefs. They're given the brief, they can't pay attention. Getting fatter, getting slower, getting weaker, but working with the nutritionist, working with their strength and conditioning coaches, doing everything they think they should be doing. And I'm embarrassed to say how many people came through. I don't know exactly, but it was probably 30, 40 guys had been in my office already before I kind of caught on that all of them were taking Ambien. Mm. And I thought, I remembered the day and like putting a little note in the margin, and then I went back and reviewed all my patients. Like, yeah, every single guy who's been in my office has taken Ambien. And I didn't know what to do. When I was thinking, well, you know, we had this combat fatigue, shell shock, like whatever from po like other wars. We're 8 or 9 years into this war, so maybe it's something like that. But nobody knew what those were. Nobody ever figured those out, so that didn't really help. And I was like, all right, well, there's a name for it, but we still don't know what it is. Again, very similar symptoms. And so I was, you know, I was kind of at a loss. So I literally just tested everything that I knew how to interpret. So I just said, go, you know, go to the hospital, get all these lab, you know, get all these blood vials drawn. I'll get this long report and I'll figure it out. And when it came back, it was very, you know, very low anabolic markers, very high catabolic or, you know, stress markers, very high inflammation, very high oxidation, poor insulin sensitivity, kind of, you know, the profile of like a like an old fat pre-diabetic man is what their labs look like. But they were, you know, jacked 28, 32-year-old SEALs. And again, I didn't know, but when that Ambien idea popped up, I was like, well, let me see if that could be correlated, because it seems to be in everybody's, you know, record. It seems to be a common denominator. Now, I went through medical school. I never had a single class on sleep. So I didn't know anything about sleep that the SEALs talking to me didn't know, right? Or knew. Like I was no more educated about sleep than anybody else on the planet. And you know, I'd taken pharmacology, so I knew what Ambien was, which means that I could describe it the way they told me to describe it and regurgitate that. It's a GABA analog, and you know, it replaced benzodiazepines because it doesn't suppress respiratory rate, so it's much safer. It's a totally benign drug. You just take it in your sleep, and it's magic. And you know, fortunately, you know, the FDA, when they approve something, the pharmaceutical company does the research. They own the research. They give the FDA what they want to give them. They don't give them what they don't want to give them until they get sued. Once they get sued, they have to reveal all the research. And they had done that about a year before all this started out, before I started running into this. So I was fortunate enough to be able to read the cases and go, oh, there's some really bad side effects to this. But I still didn't know anything about sleep. So I had to educate myself a lot on what happens when you sleep, and you know, could poor sleep or this drug be affecting what they're talking about? And to be clear, the SEALs were not complaining about sleep. It's not a culture that thinks sleep is important.
Right.
And they like, when I asked them questions about what they're taking, they would mention Ambien and I just write it down. They ne never once did any of them say, I'm having problems sleeping. But then when you question them further, like, why are you taking the Ambien? Like, well, you know, I need it to fall asleep. And then I wake up at like 4 in the morning and I can't go back to sleep. And so I just get up and I go into the gym and I work out really hard and I stay up all day. I don't take any naps, and then come home thinking I'll sleep that night. And it doesn't happen again. And, you know, take Ambien again. They're taking it with cocktails or beers or whatever. And then what I discovered, and fortunately, the SEALs already had a bit of a celebrity status to them. And so I could call anybody, right? I watch somebody's TED talk, read somebody's book, and just call them like, hey, I'm the doctor for the West Coast SEAL teams. I read your book. I heard you talk. Like, could I come train with you? Could I, whatever. And so I got to learn a lot really quickly. Everybody was really, really generous with their time. Never had anybody turn me down on that. And then I started learning, well, what all happens when you sleep. And I thought, well, geez, like, poor sleep could literally explain every single symptom that they have. I didn't think it would, but I thought it could. So let's see what happens. And then, of course, they were taking Ambien because they couldn't sleep. So I couldn't. Let's see on something else. And so I mean, I went to like mainstream medicine stuff, like Cochrane database, kind of generic, you know, NIH kind of databases. I wasn't going through anything obscure, esoteric, even functional or integrative. It was just like traditional benchtop medicine. What has proven to work with sleep? And there was several supplements that helped. And as I learned more and more about sleep, I understood why each one of those things at work worked. Like, okay, well, that makes sense. Now that I know how sleep occurs, like, that makes sense that that would work. That makes sense that would work. And to be fair, there's probably herbs and roots and things that I don't know about that would help with sleep, but I don't know about that stuff. That's not my world. And so I stuck with what I knew. And I came up with a combination of six or seven supplements, and the SEALs helped me figure out what was the effective dosage of each one of those. This is pre-Amazon Prime. So everybody had to get in their car. Like, I just gave everybody a handout, and they had to get in their car and go around to all the supplement stores in the area and figure out what they could buy. And we figured out what the best brands were, and we figured out how much to take. And yeah, I probably had about 100 guys giving me feedback, and we were changing the dosages of everything. That's how we ran it for like 3 or 4 years once we got it kind of nailed down. And then when I got out of the military in 2013, the SEALs kept haranguing me like, dude, make this into a product, right? Just make this into a supplement, because we can't travel with this. It's such a pain in the ass to go buy this and that, and that's in a powder and that's in a liquid, and these are capsules, and this comes in 90 days and that comes in 30 days, and this brand's always sold out. And so I was like, all right, I had a brick and mortar in Point Loma, San Diego, essentially. And I said, well, I'll step out of practice for a year. I'll just do private consulting, and then I'll go back into, my brick and mortar. I'll start this supplement company up. I'll do my private consulting. I'll get it off the ground. I'll hand it over to somebody. So that was 9 years ago. There'll be 10 years in this May. Since I launched that supplement company, I'm still running that supplement company. I'm still just doing private consulting, but what my experience there taught me was, these guys weren't coming to me because they had diseases, and that's what I knew how to treat was diseases. That's what I knew how to recognize, diagnose, and treat diseases. They didn't have any diseases. They just weren't performing up to the level they expected to perform at.
Yeah.
And so all I've really done is figure out more and more ways to reapproximate an ideal sort of hormone, micronutrient, macronutrient kind of body comp, like everything we know how to test. What does that look like in a healthy 25-year-old athletic male? Let's reapproximate that. And then anytime there's a dispute about what's the best, I go for, well, what's the closest to evolution? Like, what makes sense evolution wise? What would we have done 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago? What science is the most consistent with that? That's probably going to be the one that turns out to be true. And that's the story. Like you said, in the early days, I was the only one talking about sleep as a performance enhancing tool. The book Lights Out had come out, and it had talked about a lot about disease risk, and shortened lifespan and all that other stuff from. And they blamed it a lot on electric lighting, which is a true component of it. I just, because of what I was saying and the guys I knew, I just ended up on a lot of stages and a lot of podcasts, and I became the sleep guy, even though that's like, 15% of what I do, that's what I'm known for. So, yeah.
Dude, you know what I love about that too, is a couple of things. One is, you didn't set out to be the sleep guy or to revolutionize the sleep world with your supplement that you wanted to make millions at. You just went out and solved the problem, and people are like, please create something, we need it. And you're like, okay, I guess if that's what you want. I love hearing stories where you just listen to the market, and that's how you became quote unquote successful. Not that you weren't successful before, but you know what I mean? In terms of being known that way.
Yeah. I had no interest in selling supplements. I mean, zero. I'm like, that is a smarmy world, and it's full of disreputable con man. I'm like, I want nothing to do with that world, but here I am.
Yeah, here you are. And I mean, like I said, I would have never heard you on a podcast probably. Yep. Maybe you would have had a private practice in with just a small niche community, but that led you to, now I discovered you, then I'm telling other people about you, and the story goes on. So it's really cool. Yep. The other thing that's fine. Fascinating is, a lot of times when, as a health coach myself, as a holistic health coach, and I'm always looking for like, what's the root cause, and like, thinking, is it gut health? Is it this? Is it that? There's so many permutations, but I always have to remind myself, like, Joel, just think Occam's razor. Like, what is the most possible and probable solution? Do that first. And a lot of times when I'm working with police officers or first responders too, and I know you know this community well, it's like, they're telling me all these things. I'm overweight. I'm inflamed. I have no energy. And they're like, you know what they're asking me, Kurt? Joel, what do you think about TRT? Should I go on TRT? I'm 41 right now. I'm not on TRT. Maybe one day I'll go on it. I don't know.
Yep.
But I'm always like, what's your diet like? What's your sleep like? And usually they're like, oh, my sleep's a wreck. But no, I'm like,
Right.
no, you're getting 4 hours of sleep, dude, daily. Like,
Right.
we got to enhance that. Now, you know, here's the question, though. You got the SEALs. You got guys like, great, Kirk, thanks for your sleep formula. I don't want to sleep anymore because I got to be productive. So I
Yeah.
know that you're not getting these guys to sleep. First responders are the same way. Like, I'll sleep
Yeah.
when I'm dead, bro. Even if they're
You'll
just taking
get
the
there a
sup.
lot quicker that way.
Yeah. They don't see it as an optimization tool the way, you know, you and I see it. It's like, dude, if you get
Yeah.
7 hours of sleep, you're everything works better.
Yeah.
Recovery, immunity, longevity, et cetera. So if they're just taking the Dr. Kirk Parsley, you know, sleep remedy, are they still getting really, really good results, even though they're not sleeping? They're probably not committing to sleep, or do you try to get them to do a little bit more on the sleep side?
Well, I was actually able to have a surprising amount of impact in that. I'll be completely honest that when I first came up with this postulate, not hyperbole at all, I literally got laughed out of people's offices. They're just laughing hysterically, thinking this is the dumbest thing they'd ever heard that I was telling them, because the community knew their testosterone was low and their growth hormone was low and their DHT, like, basically all their anabolic hormones were low. They knew that. They didn't know why. The most common postulate amongst the leadership was that, well, it's because these guys abused steroids when they were younger, and that's why they have these problems now. Well, I knew that wasn't the case. One, because the guys trusted me and they told me if they took steroids, right? They wanted my help and they trusted me because I was a SEAL. And of course, I'd known guys who take steroids and whatever. I played. Grew up playing Texas 5A football. I knew it back then. I knew it in the SEAL teams, right? I've seen that. And I don't judge that. It's like, whatever. I mean, I don't think there's any WADA tell, like, there should be no performance enhancing drugs rules about war. Like, so I don't care. It's like, if it's going to
Yeah.
keep you alive and keep your buddies alive, go ahead. Like, I would have never even objected to it. So I know they would have told me. And some of these guys I'd known my whole life. Like, I had known them since we were 18. And so I was like, I know that's not the case. But I didn't realize it, again, initially, I didn't realize, I had no idea why their hormones would be low other than that. And I was like, wow. And then when I learned about sleep, I was like, oh, well, that's when all your hormones are being reset. Like, that's when everything's being recalibrated, is when you're in deep sleep. And Ambien reduces REM sleep by 80% and deep sleep by 20%, and alcohol does the opposite. So every time I did a sleep study on these guys, they came back 99.9% stage two sleep, which means they didn't have any REM and any deep that was measurable, which it's hard to understand how people even survived that. But that's one of the miracles of science. Also, there's all sorts of things you would assume would be deadly when you understand the process and you don't know how people get through it, but they do. What they first allowed me to do was lecture at these pre and post deployment retreats. So before the team went out, we would have a retreat with their families, give them a lot of information and resources for, how the family can handle the deployment. Obviously there's going to be struggles there. And then when they come back, kind of a reintegration, like, hey, turn the rheostat down, don't shoot people in traffic, and like, try to, like, calm guys down and reintegrate the families, like, have them meet at kind of the right level. And so we had these retreats, these weekend retreats for it, and that's how you met guys like Rob. Because we'd bring in ringers, like, lecturers that people
The
actually
best, the
wanted to
best,
hear,
yeah.
instead of just, the military members around them. They didn't want to hear us talk. But because I was free, I was at all those lectures, and I ended up sharing the stage with, Rob Wolf and Cresser and Wellborn and Dave Grossman and guys like that. And that's how I ended up on podcast and lectures. But what I'd go up there, my entire lecture was like testosterone, growth hormone, DHT, estradiol, like how all of this is affected by sleep. And if you want to get fatter and slower and dumber and colder and weaker, don't sleep. And it took a while to catch on, but those were buzzwords they understood. And so they're like, well, I'm going to increase growth hormone and testosterone by sleeping more. I'm a little more encouraged. And then once we started getting a lot of good results, which, I mean, I tripled and quadrupled people's testosterone by getting them off of Ambien and getting them to sleep regularly. And once we started good results, then the leadership started buying in, and they're like, hey, come out to the land warfare training facility and like help us set this place up, help us work on the schedule for like when we should train and when we should sleep and what should we do to the sleeping environment. So, things like blacking out the windows, making it super cold, using red lights in the spaces, and for in case people are up doing things when they should be sleeping. And scheduling like morning training blocks and then big blocks in the middle of the day so guys could recover, take a nap if they needed to. You can actually consolidate. You can learn twice as fast if you take a nap in the middle and you train in the morning, nap, train at night, go home and go to sleep. Like that, you learn twice as fast that way. So we did get a lot of buy-in eventually. And probably about a year ago, for a series of strange reasons, I was working with a team from Team Six, a dev group squad, and they all brought their labs to me. And as I was going through their sort of my differential, just asking them all the questions, their review of health systems, every single one of them understood sleep. They understood the importance of sleep. They all talked about the value of sleep. And of course, the job's chaotic and you don't get what we operate on the Pareto distribution. We try to do it, 80% of the time, do it 80% right, and 20% of the time you're screwed. And that's probably the best we'll do. So there was a lot of impact and a lot of buy-in. And I'd say that, self-praise stinks, but like that's the thing I'm the most proud of in my life. Like that's a lifetime achievement for me. Like I changed the community's values around that. And again, not because I was a genius, not because I came in there knowing that, it's because they forced me to learn that to help them. And so I'm like, this is what you forced me to learn. Here,
Well, you
use
could
it.
have just gave him more Ambien, but you didn't. So I think they didn't
Right.
force you. You made a choice, man, and I think that was really cool.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the supplement, and then I want to change gears afterwards because you're so much more than just a sleep doctor. Really, you're an optimization specialist, and in so many ways, your depth of knowledge goes beyond just that. But just briefly, if anybody's listening, they're like, "Man, like my sleep's a wreck. I want a 300% increase in testosterone. Like, sign me up." Talk a little bit just about the ingredients. Like the magnesium, vitamin D, like why are they working synergistically? And I do have one question, because I know you have vitamin D in the supplement, the sleep remedy. I always thought vitamin D was circadian based, and so you wanted to have it in the morning. Now, I don't think there's a ton of vitamin D in this supplement, but talk to me about that. Like, is that true? Or yes, it's true, but it doesn't matter, because what's the thought process by putting vitamin D in there? That's one of my questions. But then, yeah, and then over after that, just talk about some of the actual nutrients, the micronutrients you're putting in there that are having such a synergistic, profound impact.
It's ridiculously simple. The reason it's not everywhere is because it's really expensive to produce, and supplement industry, they like to make things for a dollar and sell it for $60, and that it can't be done if you're really doing good supplements. Basically, really quick review. Evolutionarily, we use the sun as our cue. Obviously, every cell in our body has a circadian rhythm. Whether we're sleeping or not, our cells have a sleep-wake cycle, and they're going to do that whether we're sleeping or not. So that's why shift work is so dangerous. Every cell in your body is doing sleep stuff while you're up working. And so that mismatch causes a bunch of problems. But evolutionarily, the sun went down, blue light went down. I'm guessing because the sky's blue, that's why we have sensors in our eyes. Has nothing to do with vision. It senses blue light's decreasing. Time to start ramping the brain down for, up, down, whatever you want to call it. Start change the brain to get ready for sleep. And of course, most people know that the initiation of that cascade is this hormone called melatonin. Melatonin is, secreted from the pineal gland, and it initiates hundreds of cascades that change the chemistry of your brain over the course of about 3 hours. If you've ever gone out camping or hunting or something and not used to electricity, you realize sun goes down, and about 3 hours later, you're fighting to keep yourself awake, right? So one of the major changes that melatonin leads to is the increase of this neuropeptide called GABA, capital GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid. And what that does is it slows the brain down, right? The best definition for being asleep is that you aren't aware of your environment, but you can be pushed or weakened, right? You can be pushed to be aware. So all that's really happening, obviously, all my senses still work. I can still see, hear, smell, taste, all of that. My brain's just not paying attention to it. And that's what allows me to be dissociated from my environment, which allows my brain to do different things. And GABA is the primary driver of that. It's something called the action potential. So like how much electricity do you have to put in this thing to pop? With GABA, it lowers the action potential. So you have to put more energy into the neuron to get the neuron to fire. And so the sun goes down, melatonin starts getting secreted in the brain, GABA increases, slows down the brain. And because the sun went down, your body temperature went down because, we've only had HVAC for like 150 years and we've been around for 150,000 years. So like that, those are the three things that led to sleep. So that was the behavioral, and everything you see about sleep hygiene is one of those three things, right? They're all playing around that. So
Yep.
you can push yourself past the GABA response by going out to a bar and hanging out with your friends and drinking beer and like looking at pretty girls, whatever the stuff. Like you can get past the GABA response and push past it. So all my product had in it was that, right? So I have a very, very low amount of melatonin because melatonin is a hormone, and if you give a hormone, you downregulate the production of that hormone, right? And even if that's not true, you downregulate the receptors for that hormone if you give an excess of it. So there's about 2 micrograms of melatonin in there, from not milligrams, micrograms, right? So a tenth of that. So from the time the sun goes down until the time the sun comes up, your brain will produce about 6 micrograms of melatonin. I'm expecting that maybe half of it gets absorbed. So you're getting about 1 microgram for my product, which is hopefully enough to initiate the cascades. Now your brain has to keep making melatonin, and so I support that pathway. The tryptophan coma of Thanksgiving, right? Tryptophan is an amino acid that's in meat. You eat a bunch of tryptophan. Tryptophan becomes 5-hydroxytryptophan. Then with the help of vitamin D3 and magnesium, 5-hydroxytryptophan becomes serotonin. Serotonin then becomes melatonin. And then, of course, you need GABA. So there's GABA in the product. GABA doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier very well. So I give an amino acid called L-theanine, which enhances the efficacy of what GABA you do have. It makes GABA work better. So we're getting a little bit of GABA in the brain, and we're getting L-theanine to capitalize on all the GABA you do have. Then I didn't have it in there when I was with the SEALs, but a few years later, just in like I'm constantly updating the product. If something better comes out, better kind of magnesium comes out, I change the magnesium, whatever. And there's some research on phosphatidylserine decreasing cortisol, and cortisol is one of the primary things that keep you awake when you're stressed out and you can't sleep. So that's it. I mean, there's no tricks in there. It's just like, hey, I'm really just bringing lumber to the construction site and going here. And like, if there's no construction crew there, nothing's going to happen. So there's nothing in there that's like, I'm going to force you to go to sleep. So like I said, GABA lowers that action potential or raises the action potential, makes it harder for a neuron to fire. All sleep drugs are GABA analogs. So they bind that same receptor, but they have 1,000 times the effect of that GABA,
Wow.
which doesn't make you sleep. It just dissociates your brain. And so you aren't paying attention to your senses. And so that's why people were taking Ambien and getting in their cars. The neocortex, right? The part of our brain that makes us the smartest animal on the planet, that part of our brain is gone, right? It's all shut off. So they're using their lizard brain, right? Which is feeding, fighting, fornicating, right? Like,
Yeah.
it's basal behavior. So they're getting in their cars. If they live in Vegas, they're driving down to casinos and gambling their life savings away and coming home and getting back in bed, waking up the next morning with no memory of that, and then finding out they don't have any savings in the bank, or picking up prostitutes, or going to an all-you-can-eat buffet and eating 15,000 calories worth of food, or going down in their kitchen and eating like all their kids' junk food, whatever, getting back in bed and having no recollection of it. And that's how Ambien got sued. Successfully, by the way, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in fines, because they knew it. And the other thing that Ambien proved, like once they got all the research, Ambien helps you fall asleep 13 minutes faster on average, And you'll sleep 37 minutes longer on average, but it decreases REM by 80% and deep sleep by 20%. It's a net loss. It's a net loss of about 40%.
Yeah. Safe
Yeah.
and effective. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah. Safe and effective.
Dude, that's awesome. I love the way you broke down the synergy and how they all like coalesce and how they all work and how they're hitting those pathways. It makes so much sense, and why it works and why it's so effective. So
Yeah. And the
I love
vitamin D
that.
question specifically, vitamin D, of course, another hormone. It's a fat soluble hormone in it, and we store it in our fat. So the reason I'm giving it at night is because I want, and like you said, there's a low dose of it. Like there's not enough. Like if you want to supplement the vitamin D3, my product isn't enough for that. It's
Yeah.
maybe half of what you need, probably about a third of what you need. I just want it in your bloodstream and be readily available in your brain in case you're not mobilizing it from your fat stores.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
key. And then
Yeah.
if someone's taking this, can they take it? Is it okay to do daily, or would you like pulse press like an on-off cycle?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've never had any problems with sleep other than I didn't value it. Like, I probably chose the worst two professions in the world for sleep, like, being a SEAL and being a doctor. And like,
Yeah.
yeah, sleep's for the weak. Like, I don't need that. A funny story. Rob Wolf came over to my house. We used to do a bunch of lectures together, because our lectures tied together really well. That's why we hit it off, because my lecture was, it was like two thirds about sleep and one third about nutrition, and his lecture was exactly the opposite. And so they put us back to back, and that's what we ended up doing to a bunch of LEOs and all that other stuff. So he
Yeah.
came over. We were doing a lecture, and this when we first I don't know if you know this far back, but when we first launched it, we called it Sleep Cocktail, because
I thought it was called that. Yeah.
yeah, because
I
that's
like that
but.
better, by the way.
Which is what the SEALs called it, which is why I called it that, because I was making it for the SEALs. So
Yeah.
they called it Doc Parsley Sleep Cocktail.
Yeah.
And so that's what I called it. And we had a little cocktail glass on it with a Caduceus sticking out, like as the umbrella, kind of, your little drink mixer stick or whatever. Turned out to be a terrible marketing name, because people think it has alcohol in it, or you're supposed to mix it with alcohol. It got
Ah.
blocked by firewalls and government and education and stuff like that. So we changed the name. But when it was Sleep Cocktails in it, like a tea bag shape, and this is still happens to this day. 10 years later, I run out of the product all the time, just because whatever, I just forget to order it, like forget to tell my people to send me some. And so he comes over to my house. He's like, "Hey, you taking a sleep cocktail?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm out." And he goes, "I got an extra one." And I was like, "No, I'm fine." And I probably hadn't had it for a couple of months, and he's waving at, Rob Wolf, while he's like, "Are you sure?" And I was like, "All right, whatever. I'll do it." So I take it, and the next morning I wake up. I'm like, "What the hell was I thinking? Like I sleep so much better. Like why did I let myself run out of that?" And it's just like every time you fall off on your exercise routine, and then you get back into it, you're like, "What was I thinking?" I've done that 20 times. Like I'm dumb, but I'm slow. So the answer, like, yeah, because there's nothing in that product that lasts more than 3 or 4 hours. Like
Yeah.
either you're going to use it and it's going to help you fall asleep, or it's going to end up in your bladder and it's not. But I always sleep better on it. Like I said, I've never had any sleep problems. And most of my really close friends, and pretty much all my clients, they get used to taking it and they don't ever want to stop, and it's relatively inexpensive. It's an easy thing to do. And it's just, it's truly, in the true sense of what it is, it's a nutritional supplement. It's like all this stuff is already in your body. We're just making sure it's there at the right time and trying to increase the, because nobody spends 3 hours getting ready for bed, right? It doesn't happen anymore. So like, all right, if you're not going to spend 3 hours, let's crush all this into you, as like, because all this would be higher if you would have spent 3 hours. So like, let's try to, reapproximate that and like give you a big bolus of all the stuff you need. Hopefully your brain will catch up and you'll get a deeper quality of sleep. And what you find is, like, and this has been known for a while, if you initiate sleep in like a high quality way, so you've done the right things and your brain is ready for sleep, once you initiate the quality, like what we call good sleep architecture from the sleep studies, once you initiate good sleep, you keep good sleep, right? If you go to sleep and then, sort of a discordant, awkward, whatever, mismatched kind of way, because your sleep hygiene isn't on, or you've had alcohol, or you ate too late, or you just exercised before bed, whatever, and you initiate sleep with sort of poor quality, it's poor quality all night. You initiate with good quality, it's good quality all night. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. It's interesting, Kurt, because I know a lot of practitioners say something similar to what you're saying. And, you know, you're like, I'm just giving you like good nutrients. But what you're doing is you're changing the input that the body receives. And when you change the input, now the body, well, I always say the body knows how to heal itself. It just needs the right input. And that's right. What you're doing. You're giving it the right input. So it can
just
heal.
Just resources.
Yeah.
It's just resources, man. If you don't need them, you know, and the odds that you need all six ingredients, probably zero. But which ones do you need? I don't know. And it could change from day to day. Like what, which one isn't it, you know, do you need that melatonin initiation? I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't.
I all the ingredients you listed, I don't know. The average 40-year-old man, I think he needs all of them. So
yeah,
I mean, deficient.
It's pretty hard to not be nutritionally deficient, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, unless you just, I mean, you're just really, really calculated with your nutrition, which most people aren't. And, you know, I find it impractical to try to get people to be, because it usually leads to neurotic behavior.
Yeah. Then you're hiring a sleep coach. And I guess, I don't know what sleep coaches do. They have these, there's sleep coaches out there. Maybe they're the ones that are getting people ready 3 hours before bed. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, sleep coaching is sleep hygiene and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
You know, which I do as part of my practice. And it's good to have people out there, you know, because, you know, we aren't the general population. You know, people listening to your podcast, that's not the general population.
Yeah.
People who listen to health related podcasts, that's like 3 to 5% of the population. Those people understand stuff like sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
You know, 95% of the population has no idea what you're talking about when you say that.
100%. Yep.
Yeah.
I want to ask you just one question and then let's get out of sleep, because if we could just, I could go there all day, but
yeah.
Has anything in the last, you know, decade that you've been really, this has been something you've really been honed in on. Has there anything that's like changed dramatically that you're like, oh man, wasn't aware of this. I'm going to start implementing this into the sleep hygiene or the protocol, or just anything that's been maybe an aha moment of like, man, I didn't think of that. This has kind of changed the way I think about sleep even more.
Yeah. I'd say the one thing that, I'd say the biggest change to my way of thinking. Well, actually the biggest way it changed my thinking, I'll say two things. This one's a very grand optic, and I guess just sort of my prioritization. But when I first started lecturing on this, I would say there's four pillars of health: sleep, nutrition, exercise, and stress mitigation. Now I say there's three pillars of health: there's exercise, nutrition, and stress mitigation, but those sit on the foundation of sleep, because none of those things work without sleep, right? Sleep impacts every one of those. So yeah, I'm sure you know, probably your audience knows, if you don't get enough sleep, that changes what your body does with the food you eat the next day. That changes what you crave. It changes what you want to eat, how much you want to eat, and it changes what your body does with it, right? The fuel partitioning is different if you're sleep deprived. Same thing with exercise. If you're sleep deprived, you probably shouldn't exercise the next day, right? You shouldn't train, or you should be active, right? But you're not going to make gains because you didn't recover from last night, right? The whole point of going to sleep tonight is to recover from today, like repair from today, and then prepare for tomorrow. And where your brain's going to use your template, like today is the template for what do you need to be better at tomorrow. So if I lifted a bunch of weights today, I got weaker while I was in the gym, right? I felt myself get weaker. When I left the gym, I couldn't do what I could do when I got into the gym, right? I got weaker. I get stronger at night, right? Sleep is the most anabolic time of your life. That's when I recover. And then my brain uses today as a template to say, oh, we need to make these muscle fibers stronger so that tomorrow, if he tries to do that same thing, we'll be able to do it better. So that's the whole purpose behind this. So if I'm not repairing and preparing, I've completely destroyed the whole, I've destroyed the whole game, because you're born into this contract. You're going to die, and it takes 8 hours to recover from being awake for 16 hours. That's it. There's no getting around it. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what else you do. you can't train around it. And all the stress mitigation is going to do at that point, whether you're doing mindfulness or meditation or prayer, like whatever it is that you do, some sort of flow movement, yoga, whatever it does, whatever you do to reduce your stress. If I don't get enough sleep, right? I just said the whole reason I go to sleep tonight is repair and prepare. It takes 8 hours. If I only spend 6 hours sleeping, I still have to do tomorrow. It still comes at exactly the same time. I still have all the same requirements. My body compensates by increasing cortisol and increases my stress hormones to get me through the day. And now I'm going to do stress mitigation activities just to get me down to where I would have been if I would have gotten a good night's sleep. So I'm not increasing my health. So that's why I say, like, now that's the foundation. That's the foundation of all of them, because the other things just simply don't matter much if you aren't getting good sleep. You're like the ability to benefit from those three is almost gone. And then the other thing I'll say quickly is that I'd say in the last three to five years, kind of, there's a lot of research kind of showing that the quality of sleep is probably about 50% more important than the duration. To be ideal, you have to have both. But if you're going to compromise one, the quality is a little more important than the duration of sleep. And part of that quality is consistency.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very great point. I remember when I would track my sleep with my Oura Ring, they talk about that. If you're consistently going to bed at the same time, and I noticed trends when I was consistent with hitting the time, my sleep stacked. And I think you kind of talked about that. Like, it had an effect downstream. So if I didn't take care of the upstream problem by being consistent, I was going to, not sleep as well consistently over the long term. The day I had shift work or the day I worked an overtime shift, oh man, it took me three more days to get in that rhythm again. So what a great point. Dude, I know you do way more than sleep. I know you're into hyperbaric hormones, psychedelics now. What are some exciting projects and things that you're working on and also just bringing into the private practice and that you're utilizing that you're excited about?
Yeah, well, peptides are really exciting. So I've been doing hormones for almost 20 years now. I pretty much have that wired. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of changes coming along. Every now and then there's some new study that maybe helps me figure out the 3 to 5% of people who aren't responding right.
Hey, Kirk, on that note of hormones, just really quick, what's your take on TRT? Do you think, and I'm curious from like the longevity and not like, oh, Joel, your testosterone's low, but I'm 41 now. And one day I'm sure my testosterone's going to dip and I want to be a virile 70-year-old. I want to be living I want to be optimized.
Right.
Should I be in your theory now? Do you think, you're going to have to get on TRT, Joel? It's just, if you want to optimize your life.
Yeah. So at some point, I'd say kind of what differentiates me from like some of my colleagues that do similar stuff, everybody's moving towards this longevity medicine now. I don't know how long you're going to live, so I don't feel comfortable saying that I can affect your longevity, because maybe you're going to live to 95, and if you work with me, you're going to live to be 90, or maybe you're going to live to be 75, and if you work with me, you're going to live to be 85. I have no idea, right? And you could die tomorrow, no matter what we do, right? So, the way I look at it is like, I'm here, like I say this, like I can't promise you that I'm going to add years to your life, but I can promise you I'll add life to your years. So like, I want to make sure that you have the highest quality of life you can possibly have. And what we find is like, that's close to youth, right? So if I give your hormone, your hormones, micronutrients, whatever we're studying, DNA methylation, telomere length, whatever new age kind of stuff we can do. If I hand that to a colleague of mine with your data, your personal data off of it, like, who do you think this is? I want them to say, that's a 25 to 30 year old healthy athletic man.
Yeah.
That's what it should look like. Why wouldn't you make it look that way? Right. That's our peak performance. So why wouldn't you want to hold on to that? Now, obviously you can't perform like you're 25 your whole life. Yeah. And I won't make you look any younger, probably, right? Like, whatever damage you have, that's there. But there are ways. So sleep is obviously one of the most important ways, because that's, again, where all of your hormones are being calibrated and regulated, is during deep sleep. So that's the first step to getting your hormones aligned. once you do that, it's men and women, they're both the same. A testicle and an ovary is really the same organ. It just, slips out of the body into a funny looking sac in men, but it's really the same organ. And so the, women's ovary function decreases, our testicular function decreases. The primary sex hormone for both men and women is testosterone. And so, you need that to be high to perform well. You need it to be youthful. And another thing, that bell curve of testosterone, 250 to 1100, when that's broken down into 20% groups, so quintiles, if you're in that top 80% or above of that, regardless of your age, you have the lowest risk of death. You have the lowest risk of any disease, right? Death from any cause or disease, any disease. Every quintile you go down, that doubles. So you go from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 times more likely to die, 16 times more likely to have any disease if you're in that lowest 20%. But endocrinologists will say, you're in the bell curve, you're good to go, because testosterone is controversial. If that were vitamin D and we knew for a fact that you had to stay in the upper 80% of the range to live longer and healthier lives, everybody would do it. It would be medical malpractice to not do it. But because it's political, we don't do that with testosterone. So, I'll try to stay off my soapbox with that one, but that one infuriates me. But optimize your sleep. And then you get a little older, like your age, it's like, all right, well, let's start doing some things to help you produce testosterone and make sure that you aren't producing too much estrogen out of your testosterone. And those are mainly over-the-counter supplements, maybe one or two pharma here or there. You ride that out as long as you can. And then at some point, like the boys just won't do the job anymore. You can stimulate them all they want. They won't make enough testosterone. And then that's when you get on HRT. I started HRT at 48. I regret it now. I don't regret it in that I feel like I did something wrong. I just, had I known then what I know now, I probably could have pushed myself out another 6, 7, 8 years before I needed TRT. So whatever, I'm taking it a little longer than I needed to. I have 62-year-old guys who still aren't on TRT and they have the hormones of a 25-year-old. So, but yeah, if you want that, if you want to be robust and resilient and strong, and if you want all of that, you have to have the hormonal profile to do that. You're not going to do that with low testosterone.
That's what I mean. Awesome. Yeah. No, thanks for answering that. Cause I'm even like, as I go get older, I'm like, man, I don't know. It's something I'll definitely consider. I think as long as the pros outweigh the cons, and I think that's what you're saying. It looks
good.
It does.
Yeah. And you just have to keep it in the normal physiologic ranges. The reason steroids are bad, people don't understand this. When bodybuilders take steroids, they're taking like 10 different kind of drugs all at once to all have different effects. And they're making their testosterone, 5,000, 10,000% higher than it would ever be in nature, like in their natural lives, to get these superhuman, super physiologic muscles that they could never get otherwise. We're not doing that. Like, we're just saying we're going to reapproximate youth. So yeah. Like I weigh 250 pounds now because I'm a little chubbier than I usually am, but I've weighed 240 pounds since I was like 17 years old. I've been on TRT for, what did I say, 48, so 6 years. I still weigh, I'm still the same. Like, I don't have any more muscle, probably have a little bit less, but not a whole lot less.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, dude. Just briefly talk a little bit. I know we've been talking for a while now. Definitely would love to have you on for a part two and maybe geek out on everything else you're up to besides sleep. Cause I know we didn't even cover that and we're already like an hour in the conversation, but maybe we'll just do that. We'll just kind of pin this here and have you come back on. Cause I'd love to hear more about just where your practice has moved from, like, again, hormones, hyperbaric, psychedelics, and just some of the new stuff that you're implementing.
Peptides. There's some really exciting stuff out there. Really exciting. Yeah. If you're new to hormones, that's super exciting and that's low hanging fruit. And like, you can geek out on that and you can get ramped up and really resilient and like strong on that. You can do that pretty quickly. If you have a good doctor, that's only a couple of months worth of work to get that optimized. Peptides are really, really interesting. And though, like, there's a new peptide coming out almost every day, there's definitely new research coming out every day. How those work in concert, like effective dosages, timing of dosages, how it works with nutrition, combining things with hyperbarics, combining hyperbarics with peptides, combining hyperbarics with psychedelics, combining all three of them. There's all sorts of really cool things, like depending on where your performance detriments are coming from. So like when I work with, you know, these retired SEALs, or if I'm working with my private clients, I don't say, hey, here are the things that are wrong with you. This is what we need to fix. I say, let's get a picture, snapshot right now of everything I know how to measure. Let's see where you are. Tell me what your goals are, what's not going well for you, or what's not going as well as you would like. Like maybe everything seems pretty good, but you want to be better at this. And then let's start driving the things that I know will help you do those. Like I help you, I drive towards your goals with you. We set annual goals. We break them down into quarterly goals. We have an attack plan, and that's it. And it encompasses a lot of stuff, man. I mean, and any intervention you can possibly think of is something I'm willing to work with. To wow. include regenerative medicine, stem cells, exosomes, you name it, like any of that stuff. So
you're doing that all in your clinic in Austin?
Well, I refer out to my friends for the regenerative medicine, because it's a lot of overhead, a lot of equipment, a lot of regulation, a lot of compliance shit that I don't like. I'm primarily telemedicine. So I don't want all that overhead and all those complications and all those requirements on me. So I farm that stuff out.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I had a last thing, and then we'll definitely, let's have you back on for part two. I want to geek out on peptides. I had a functional medicine doc I interviewed back in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. And we were talking about peptides, and she said, Joel, everyone was raging about stem cells. She's like, peptides will be the future. You'll see. And then what happened is there was a lot of bad stuff coming from China. So peptides kind of got regulated, but now I think we're seeing a resurgence, if I'm correct. So,
I'd say that's the most exciting thing for me out of any one thing, just because there's so much unknown. But you know, the Russians have been using that stuff since the 80s. And we're totally trying to catch up. But you know, all these, for anybody who doesn't know, like all these peptides already exist in your body, and we're just, you know, we're studying physiology and going, I wonder what this molecule does. Let's concentrate it and put it in an animal and see what happens. You know, and that's, you know, that's where peptides are coming from. So it's just a deeper understanding of physiology. And I agree with your functional medicine doctor that, you know, stem cells and exosomes they're an imperfect product, because it's not specialized, right? So if I put stem cells, what's called pluripotent stem cells into your knee, those stem cells can become anything. So maybe they'll become chondrocytes and increase the cartilage in your knee. Maybe they'll become fat cells. Maybe they'll die. Maybe they'll, like, who knows? We can't control that. And the same thing with exosomes. But now there is a way to genetically modify the stem cells and exosomes. That's a new and exciting area as well. But I think peptides will overtake it. And there's some amazing peptides. We could have a full conversation about that. Neurological things that, you know, there's things that support your physiology. There's things that increase mitochondria, increase the function of mitochondria. There's things that enhance cognition, enhance vascular growth, and enhance stem cells, like you name it, that any physiologic function we can manipulate with peptides now. And that's like, and it's an art, because there's so many of them, and knowing what works and knowing the effective doses and when to combine them and what to combine and when to time them. That's an exciting field.
Yeah, really, really cool. I can't wait to talk to you about that, dude. Cause there's, I'm thinking years ago, Ben Greenfield, bringing back Ben Greenfield, we, you know, there was like three big peptides people were talking about: BPC 157.
Yeah.
There was this TR100 and then lipothelium. And now, like you said, there's so many, and the results are remarkable. And I know you've got some testimonials you were telling me offline about just getting somebody better from long COVID.
Yeah.
And just getting that guy back out in 3 months. And he saw, and we won't name names, but he saw the best of the best. He saw all the doctors out there, the McCulloughs and everybody, and nobody could fix him. So yeah, let's do this. I want to have you on for part two. Let's talk peptides and just some of the things that you're doing. If people are listening right now, where can they just connect with you, learn more about you, find out what you're doing? If they want to work with you, where should they go?
Yeah, I'm not really good about being out there, but my website, docparsley.com, DOC, and then parsley like the herb, docparsley.com has, you know, there's a bunch of lectures on there and my TED talk and media appearances and podcast links and blogs and whatever, the supplements on there, book. I have a book on there, ebook, some, you know, things like that. People want to go into that. Kind of the only social media I really use is Instagram, but I honestly don't use it a whole lot. But that's at Kirk Parsley. That's kind of my personal stuff more than anything. I'll post on sleep now and then or science now and then, but it's kind of more like keeping in touch with my friends and like, hey, here's where I'm at, here's what I'm doing, kind of thing. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Awesome. Dr. Kirk Parsley, appreciate you, man. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on.